Okay, today's daf is Ayin Zayin. We're going to start at the bottom of Ayin Vav Amibet. Two lines from the bottom. Hanu Gidim Rakim. Okay, so we were talking about these sinews. The sinews are very soft. They were brought before Rabbah. I'm a Rabbah Lamai Lichush Lehu. So they brought them in front of Rabbah to check what the story was. Could they, again, the issue was the or and the basar. If you have a broken bone that's jutting out, you need the or and the basar together, or we said yesterday that maybe the or is just mashlim le basar, that you can use the or just to, if you have, okay, let's start from the beginning. You need rov of the or and the basar to cover where the bone is broken. And if that's the case, then we can assume, as the Aruch HaShulchan said, it's going to kind of reheal, which means it's not going to be a trefa. So then we said that we finished yesterday with saying that or, we're going to say, or mashlim lebasar, meaning you can use the skin just if you're missing a little bit to get to rov. But you can't have like 50-50 or and basar that make up, again, to make up the 51%. So now there was a case of soft sinews that came before Rabbah. And in other words, the question is, can these also be mitzdaref to the basar to be counted that this is covering the majority of the bone? So Amar Rabbah, lamai lichush lehu, what are you concerned for? Chada, number one, da Amar Rabbi Yochanan, gidin shesofan lahakshot, nimnim alehem bepesach. We have to go backwards. What's nimnim alehem bepesach? This means, for Pesach, you go together in a group. You know, everyone is nimneh ala korban. And you can only be nimneh as long, you can all say, we're going to share this animal as long as there's a kezayit for everybody. So the question is, what can make up that kezayit? Okay? So the kezayit has to be made up of, it can even be made up, according to Rabbi Yochanan, if you get a kezayit of gidim, even though eventually they're going to harden, right now it sounds like they're a type of gidim that will eventually harden, but right now they're soft. So he says, you can be nimnim alehem bepesach, which would mean that these gidim that are soft can also count as part of the flesh. Ve'od, and additionally, hatarach hasam amanan shel Yisrael, which means that we basically don't want to create a problem and throw out people's meat, so therefore we're obviously going to be makel. Amalei Rav Papa l'Rabba, but Rav Papa wasn't so happy with this psak. He says, Rishim ben Lakish, he says, wait a minute. It's true, Rabbi Yochanan says this, but Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish disagrees with him when it comes to Pesach, whether you can be nimneh. He says, you can't be nimneh alehem bePesach. And this is Yisur Adoraita, v'treifa. And you're just saying, what are we worried about? Ishtik. He was silent. Okay? He didn't know what to answer, meaning he kind of agreed that he was wrong. Vamai ishtik. But now the Gemara says, why? Vahamar Rava, doesn't Rava say, Hilchataka vateh de Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish behane tzlat. There's only three cases where when Rish Lakish argues with Rabbi Yochanan, we actually paskin like Rish Lakish. So, and these are all listed in Yevamot. So, this isn't the case. So why are you so concerned to say, oh, we have to be concerned for Rish Lakish? Generally, we don't paskin like him. So what do they say? Ah, shane hacha, this case is different. Da hadar be Rabbi Yochanan legabe de Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan actually retracted his statement about this. So it's true, Rabbi Yochanan said it, but he eventually changed his mind and agreed with Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish. And that's why Rabbi Papa said to him, what happened to Rish Lakish? How can you ignore Rish Lakish? So even though generally we don't paskin like Rish Lakish against Rabbi Yochanan, in this case, Rabbi Yochanan conceded him and changed his mind. How do we know this? Damar Lei, in their discussion back and forth, he said to him, Rabbi Yochanan said to Rish Lakish, Al takniteni bilashon, Al takniteni, don't argue with me so much, because bilashon yachid ani shoneuta. I'm only saying my opinion, it's a dat yachid, I know that. Okay, which basically means, I know that this isn't generally accepted. I was talking about the dat yachid, but, you know, I don't really hold that way. Okay. Hahu nishbar ha'etzem v'yatza lachutz. Now we have a case of a bone was broken and it was jutting out. De'ishtekil kortita mine. A little bit, now until now we've talked about a bone jutting out, broken, not detached entirely. And then we talked about if the meat and the skin is covering it, then it's okay, the majority of it. Now we have a piece of bone that's jutting out, but a little piece of it, of the bone, broke off entirely. It's gone. Okay? Atalakameda Abaye. Shaye tilta rigla. He waited around three rigalim. Amarle Ravada Barmatna, Zil Kameda Rava Bereja Rav Yosef. Now, why did he wait around three rigalim? Because in the rigalim, they would see the other rabbis. That's when people would congregate more, and therefore he'd be able to ask other people and get their opinion. Right? It's interesting because it's Abaye here, right? He was among the greater ones of his generation, and he didn't really know. And he basically postponed answering this question for three rigalim. Amar, we had this before also, and you wonder, well, what's the relevance of this if you're going to wait around three regalim, right? Either it was just a theoretical question. That would, you know. So anyway, he waffled around for three regalim. Amalei Rabat Bar Matna, Zil Kamei de Rava Bereid de Rav Yosef Bar Chama. Go bring it in front of Rava, the son of Rav Yosef, the son of Chama, who is none other than Rava, who always argues with Abaye. De harifa sakine. Okay, this is a funny line, right? What does it mean? Right, you know, it's here we're talking about cutting bones, all that, right? His knife is very sharp. What does that mean? When you cut with a very sharp knife, what happens? You cut and it's done. You don't delay. They're basically saying Rava is not a waffler like you. He cuts to the chase, so to speak, right? He'll give you an answer right away. Okay, and they were he was a little bit critical of the fact that Abaye was postponing a decision on this psak. Right, this is like the indecisive versus the decisive people. Ata lekame, so he brings it before Rav. Amarle michti nishbar haetzem v'yatsa lachutz tnan. Look at the Mishnah. The Mishnah says a bone breaks and juts outward. Mali nafal, mali ite. And the Mishnah makes no distinction whether a piece of bone fell off or a piece of bone didn't fall off. So this is obviously the same as the case in the Mishnah. Okay? So again, right, nishbar etzem, it all depends on if rova basar kayam, then it works. And if lav, ein shchitato matarto. So he basically says, since the Mishnah doesn't distinguish, there must be no reason to make a distinction. Right? You can obviously say the opposite, that the Mishnah was only talking about nishbar without a piece breaking off. But he thinks it's very simple, and that's what he answers him. Amarle Ravina l'Rava. Now Ravina questions Rava about the following. Mitlaket mahu. What if, okay, right, until now we assume, let's say it's covering the majority means all in one place. But what if it's missing pieces, you know, missing basar all around in different places, and if you would gather it all together, you have rove. Would that count? Mitroses mahu. What if it thins out? Okay, and it pulverizes and thins out, and it's much thinner than you have a very thin layer of basar misaviv. This is very similar to questions we saw previously. Nit masmes. Okay, what if it rots? Mahu. Okay, so the meat around it is rotten. Hechidami mitmasmes. What would be the case of mitmasmes? I'm Rafuna Braid Rav Yeshua. Kosha rofe kodro. If the rofe would cut it off because it was already, and if there's flesh that's already just, decayed, and he would just cut it off, then that would be considered what we're talking about, decayed. Ibailahu, now notice they don't answer these questions. Ibailahu, another question was asked, another few questions. Nikev mahu, what if it was perforated? Niklaf mahu, what if it was peeled away? Nistak mahu, what if it was cracked? Mahu, nital shlisha elyon mahu. Okay, this is what if the skin tears off, but the, right, this is, one second, shlish tachton. Oh, sorry. Shlish tachton. I had in my head all the time, right? So the bottom shlish is no longer there, meaning the meat that's right up against is gone, but the skin is above that. In other words, so the skin's not mamash touching the skin on the bone. There's like an empty space where the meat, where the flesh was, but the skin is on top of that. Or the basically all the flesh that's right up against the bone is taken off. Tashma, so they at least try to say, let's learn from here, at least about the last one. Da'amar Ula, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. The others they don't attempt to answer. This one they say, Ula said name Rabbi Yochanan, or Harehu Kibasar. So what do you see? What does it mean, or Harehu Kibasar? It means, according to him, the or, even without the flesh, can count. So now what's a case of skin without the flesh? Think about a piece of meat. You know, if you have skin and then there's flesh underneath. So let's say you just had the skin. Obviously, you're missing the flesh underneath. So therefore, that would be exactly this case. So it seems like that would be okay, because you have the skin without the flesh. So now they say, no, that doesn't necessarily prove anything, because dilma dekana mashcha dide. Maybe the case of the skin is when it's in the part of the bone where there, right, there's also part of a bone. Think about a piece of chicken, right? You think about a chicken leg. That's the easiest to think about. So there's skin at the bottom where there is actually no flesh ever there. So maybe when they say oral kareyuk basar, they mean when there's no basar, then the skin that's around the bone is good. But if there's flesh above it, right, in between the skin, and the flesh comes off, but the skin is still there, since it's not really attached anymore to the bone, maybe that's not going to be considered that it will protect it from being a trefa. Amar Rav Ashi, ki avina be Rav Papi, ibayalam. When I was at Rav Papi's house, they asked, nikdar kemin taba mahu. So let's say you have a break in the bone, and around the bone you have some flesh, but there's a break in the flesh. The flesh doesn't, what's the whole idea? The whole idea is that we assume if there's still raw flesh, then the flesh will kind of reattach itself. So in this case, right where the break is, okay, you can see there's a picture of the Shanshin if you have it, where the break is, the flesh is kind of away from the break, and there's a break in between the flesh and the... Oh, that's funny. You have different pictures. Right. The Hebrew I see has a different picture, which is much harder to understand. The English one that you have looks like it's got a much better...
This is the new picture.
That's the newer one, and this is... Uh-huh. Okay. So basically, there's a break. I'll try to explain it.
The skin, the meat will pull away naturally when something's coming.
Right. The meat will pull away. Right. So, but if it's in, let's say, a ring shape... And the, right, so the, again, around the circumference of the bone, there's a ring shape, you know, the meat is in a ring shape, but it's torn where the bone is broken, and it's kind of away from, both sides are away from each other, which looks like they're not going to actually heal themselves. Upashtana meha, so they asked him, what's the case? So the upashtana meha, the amarav Yehud amarav, davar ze sha'alti lachachamim ulirofim. Okay, this is a good line, right? He says, I asked the chachamim, but I also asked the doctors, because the whole issue is, how does it heal? Amru, misarto be'etzem u'ma'ale arucha. So they said to me, what you should do is make a tear in the flesh, right? Like kind of, I think it's in the flesh, right? Right. Make a tear in the flesh, in the meaty part, so that it starts to, so the blood starts to flow. And then what will happen is the blood will congeal, and the blood flowing, maybe because the blood has nutrients in it, it'll kind of get to the other side and it'll help it to heal. So that's the way it's going to end up healing. That means amala rucha, it'll start to kind of congeal. But when you make this, you make this tear in the etzem in order to get the blood flowing, aval parzala mizraf zarif. But don't do it with an iron implement or something like that. Okay, I saw it in the first one, it says you should use a bone or something, because that will basically, they say that it'll kind of make it worse. Okay, if you use that, it'll make it much worse. So do it carefully, basically. Not with an iron implement. Amra Papa, vihu dekana garma dide. And this is only when the flesh is attached still to the bone. If the flesh is already detached from the bone, then this isn't going to help at all. Okay? So it's only when the flesh that's near where it's torn open is still attached to the bone, then it will heal in this manner. Okay. Done with trefa, that was a little aside. Back to our issue of the ben pkua and the fetus. I'm going to talk a lot about placentas. Hashochet et habema umatzaba shilia. So you shecht an animal and you find inside a placenta. Nefesh hayafet tochlena, we had this lashon before. That means if you're not disgusted by it, you can actually eat it, okay? It's actually not a problem to eat. By the way, Dov Linzer has an article about people apparently suck on the placenta. It's like chew on it. It's supposed to have health, you know, good for the baby. I don't know exactly. I heard about it. I didn't actually have a chance to look at the article. But he has a whole thing basically matiring it. As long as you're not eating it, but you're chewing on it. And the question, anyway, it comes a little bit out of this sugya. So anyway, if you have a shilia, nefesh hayafet ochlena, so if you're not disgusted by it, this is an animal, not a human fetus. Human fetus is more of an issue, but he talks about it there. What? So anyway, if you find this shilia inside, you can actually eat it, okay? Because it would be matir by the ben pekua, by the shchita. Ve'ena mitama lo tumat ochlin ve'lo tumat nevelot. Okay? It doesn't carry tumah at all, because even though you might not be disgusted by it and you might eat it, but generally this isn't food, and therefore anything that's not considered food can't accept tumat ochlin. And it's also not considered a nevela. Chishev aleha, but if you thought about it beforehand and said, I'm going to use this as food, then mitama tumat ochlin avalo tumat nevela. Then it could have tumat ochlin. It still won't be nevela, but it won't have tumat ochlin, right? Because the shchita matired it from nevela. Okay? Or even, the truth is, even if the animal dies, I see Rashi says, lo tumat nevela, even if the animal dies, it still doesn't have tumat nevela, because we're going to see why it does. Okay? But anyway, it doesn't have tumat nevela. We're going to, right, I think the Gemara tells us why. Anyway, it's just not considered an animal, right? It's just a placenta. Shilia sheyatza miktzata. But now we have an issue. What if before you shechted the animal, part of it came out? So remember, we talked about this case. It's asura ba'achila. Why? Siman v'la b'isha, siman v'la b'beima. If you have a placenta, there's a concern if the placenta starts coming out that maybe the fetus is in the placenta, in which case you might have had the head of the animal come out, right? Even if a little bit of it came out, maybe the head of the animal was in that part of the placenta we can't see anymore because the placenta, right? It's all, right? It didn't actually make it. So it's a placenta that might have a head in it that had come out, which means again, right? If the head of the animal comes out, we already said the shchita is not matir that animal. So therefore,
is it possible
that a placenta,
with today's knowledge,
right? I don't know if all this is possible. I don't know the reality of all this, if it's really the case.
They're suggesting that if it wasn't viable, the fetus somehow dissolved and is in there, but you can't actually make
that part.
Well,
sometimes there's a second one.
Right.
You know,
so we're going to talk about that. Yes. Right? You think about this whole thing about ultrasounds, right? And nowadays, you would know whether there were two in there from before. I mean, assuming someone thought to do an ultrasound on this animal. But certainly, they didn't have even the concept that, you know, they wouldn't know. Maybe there was another one, right? They have no way of knowing. Hamivakeret shepila shilia. If you have an animal that's supposed to, right now, it's her firstborn offspring. So, again, what's the story? It will have Kedushat Bechor to it. Now, if it has Kedushat Bechor, then you can't just throw it to the animals, right? You can't get Hana'ah from it. You have to bury it. But they say here, and we'll see why in the Gemara, that if she miscarries this first offspring, and it's a shiliah, okay, it's just a miscarriage of a shiliah, yashlichen el klavim. You don't have to worry about having tushah pechor, and you can throw it to the dogs. Ubimukdashim, but if it's an animal that was designated as a korban, which means the offspring also is sanctified, then tikaver, then the shiliah that comes out has to be buried. Ve'ein kovrinota, this is the most interesting part of today's daf, ein kovrinota b'parashat rachim, you can't bury it on the roads, the big roads or intersections, ve'ein tolino tabi'ilan, and you can't hang it on a tree, mipnei darkei ha'emori. These are ways that the Amorites, I don't know exact way you would pronounce it. Anyway, this is basically the way that the non-Jews do. It's a superstition. People would do this if an animal miscarried. In order to prevent future animal miscarriages, they would do these kind of things. They would hang it either on the main roads, or they would bury it, or they would hang it on a tree. So therefore, we're not allowed to do that because, okay, we'll get to this later, but it doesn't in fact really do anything, right? So it doesn't do anything, right? It's just a superstition. We're going to get to what things can people do that are superstitions, that are allowed, that aren't allowed. Because as you know, in Judaism, there are all sorts of things about superstitions. So we'll talk a little bit about it if we get to it by the end. Minane mile. So where do we derive this? That, right, this is a question on the... But I guess really all these halachot about the shiliah, that if already some of it comes out, it's going to be forbidden. So, Ditana Rabbanan, it's right. Kol behema mafresa parsa v'shosa chesa tochlu. So what do they say? Lirabot et hashiliya. It says kol, which means not only an animal but even a shiliya. Yachol afilu yatzam miktzata. You might have thought even if some of it, right? This is that you can eat the shiliya. Remember, if it right, that if you shech the animal, it allows also the shiliya. You might have thought even yatzam miktzata. So it sounds like you can eat it anyway. No, why not? Talmud lamar ota. Ota v'lo shiliyata. It's only that, but not the, 1 second. Right, but not if it comes out, okay? That's what they assume this means, not if it actually comes out. Michti ein shiliya b'lo vlad, lama likra, but I don't understand. If we have this concept that ein shiliya b'lo vlad, which is what we said in the Mishnah, right? We said in other words, but right, with simam vlad, bisha simam vlad beima, which means there is no such thing as a shiliya without a vlad. So of course, we should assume that yatsa miktzata, right? You wouldn't be able to eat it because again, that means the animal already came out before the shechita. So what do you need the pasuk for? So they say, yeah, it's true. You don't really need the pasuk. It's just a logical thing. But pras machtaba alma. They anyway bring a pasuk just to connect it. But it's not that they actually derived it from the pasuk. They derived it from the fact that ein shiliya b'lo vlad. Ve'ena mitama. So now we're going to talk about this tumah. By Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha or chamor sheshlako mahu. If you have the skin of a chamor that you boiled up. It means you cooked it for a long time and it became edible, right? The assumption is ore is not edible, okay? It's usually hard and not so edible, but if it's cooked, then already you can eat it. So, mahu, what's its status? So now they say, my, for what? Ilu tumat ochlin tanina, ilu tumat nevelo tanina. If you want to talk about skin being metame ochel, in other words, is it food that it can contract, it's capable of becoming tame? Tumat ochlin. We already have a Mishnah about that. And if you want to say tumat nevelot, is this considered a nevela? If it comes from a dead chamor, does it carry tumat nevela? Also tanina. Where so? Tumat ochlin. Ditanya ha'or v'hashilya. And right, by the way, this is not necessarily, we learned it in a Mishnah. In this case, it seems to be a braita. I didn't check. Tanya is actually accurate here, but I assume it's just a braita. Yeah. Ha'or v'hashiliya, but in any case, even if it's a braita, right, it doesn't matter, Mishnah braita, usually Mishnahs are just more known, but even right this, they say, well, you don't need to, why are you asking this question? We already have a Mishnah that says it explicitly. Ha'or v'hashiliya ematamim tumat ochlin. Okay, so here it says skin, and now you can see why this is brought up, because it's talking about a shiliya and a placenta are not metamim tumat ochlin. This is connected with, right, the whole thing was, what did we say? A placenta is not considered food. Since it's not considered food, therefore it's not matame tumat ochlin. So likewise, the skin of the chamor is also not considered ochel. But what if you cooked it up? So here the brita says, skin in general and a placenta are not matame tumat ochlin, but or sheshalko v'ashiliya shechishev aleha mitamim tumat ochlin. So what do you see here? Or sheshalko is just like, if you cooked up the skin and it now becomes edible, it's just like the shiliya. Okay, that a shiliya that you decided I'm going to eat this is already can become metami tumat ochlin. So if you want to say the question was about tumat ochlin, here's your answer. It is metami tumat ochlin. And if your answer is tumat avelo, nami tanina. Binivlata, that's the pasuk, right? Hanogea binivlata, yitma'ada erev. Ki amut min abeima asher hilachem lochlath. An animal dies, hanogea binivlata. What do they say? It says specifically, you're nogea binivlata. Nivlata comes to exclude viloba or viloba atzamo, viloba gidim, viloba karnayim, viloba tlafayim. Okay? The whole thing, but not, right, the animal itself, but not the skin, not the bones, not the sinews, not the horns, and not the hooves. Amaraba Rabba Barachana said about this braita, lo nitzracha ella, the reason why they brought this wasn't regular skin. That's obvious. It's not matami tumat avelo. What were they really coming to tell you? Ella shasan sike kdera. It's talking about when you cooked up the skin. So here, what do you see? The opposite of the last one, right? Tumat ochlin, we said it is matami tumat ochlin if you cook it. However, when it comes to tumat avela, it clearly isn't. Okay, so again, we're back to our question. What were you even asking about? If it's tumat ochlin, the bright already tells us. No. Yes. And if it's tumat avela, the bright already tells us no. So why were you even asking a question? So what is the answer? La'olam tumat ochlin, v'shane or chamor demais. The or of a donkey particularly is considered disgusting, and therefore, even though generally if you took or and you cooked it up, it would be considered food, his question was, is the skin of a chamor, though, and that explains why his question was specifically about a chamor and not just about anything, right? It wasn't just because he had a chamor in front of him, but he was saying the or of a chamor is particularly disgusting, and therefore the question was, is it mitame tumat ochlin, because maybe this isn't even food by anybody's standards.
Isn't it weird that they would use a non-kosher animal?
I also thought that was a little weird. Now, first of all, they're not talking about eating it. They're just talking about, is it mitame?
Turning something edible into something edible.
Right, but edible, and then edible doesn't mean...
Or something that,
but if you have non-kosher food that became tame, it can move, you know, and again, how is, right? You have a avatuma, which touches food. That food can then come in contact with other food, even if you're not eating these things, and even if they're not kosher. I also thought that was a little strange every time I know I'm kosher, but I assume, and I didn't look it up, but I assume that what they mean is just, they're just talking about, is this item considered food in the world in general to transfer impurities? It's not, it's certainly not edible for our purposes to eat because it's not kosher. Shiliyah sheyatzta. Now we're going to talk about the potential of there having been another animal. Okay, so Amar Rabbi Elazar, lo shanu ela she'eni mavlad. Okay, so again, the Mishnah said, shiliyah sheyatzta miktzata asura ba'achila. Right? So now he says, it's forbidden as long as there's no animal inside. Aval yeshi mavlad, ein choshashin livlad acher. But if the placenta comes out, and then they find inside, and the placenta came out a little bit, and then they shech the animal, and they find an animal inside. Well, if there's an animal inside, then you don't have to worry that there was an animal in the placenta, and then you can actually, you can eat it, because, right? So then, would you be able to eat it? Because according to that, it did come out, and usually it wouldn't have allowed it if it came out. So how would you say this? I guess it's not, right? Right, yeshi mavlat, 1 second. And then you would say
the issue is whether the fetus came out at all, and if it's born separately from the placenta, then the fact that the placenta came out a little, it's not an issue of the placenta coming out.
Right, I guess the placenta, that's why. Because the placenta only came out a little bit, and then the majority of the placenta didn't come out, so that would have been matir b'shchita. Okay, so now that's Rabbi Elazar. So he says this is only if there's no other vlad inside, but if there's a vlad, you don't have to worry that maybe there was another vlad, and then what would you have to say? You'd have to say, number one, this placenta had a vlad and the fetus got destroyed, and there was another placenta which got destroyed also. Okay? You don't have to worry about that. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, bein eini mavlad, bein yeshi mavlad. It doesn't matter whether there's a vlad or not. Choshashin livlad acher. You're always concerned that maybe there's another vlad. So then they say, right, so this, right, so we're going to explain what this means, okay? It's not exactly right. According to this, right, the whole thing is a safek. Maybe there was another vlad, maybe there wasn't another vlad, right? Maybe there was another shiliyah, maybe there wasn't another shiliyah, and therefore it shouldn't matter whether there is a vlad or there isn't another vlad. Maybe you should be concerned for this in general. So now, you know, maybe you couldn't be concerned. Maybe there was another vlad, which means that maybe there's no fetus in here at all. Ini v'hamar Rabbi Yirmiyah lichumra amara Rabbi Elazar. But wait, but didn't Rabbi Yirmiyah say that Rabbi Elazar, 1 second, according to this, I have to remember how we're explaining at this point because we're going to re-explain. 1 second. Sorry. We're going to understand Rabbi Yochanan now that what he's saying is, bein eini mavlad, bein yeshi mavlad. 1 second, did I skip something here? Bein einima, bein yeshima, choshashin livlad acher. Okay, which means the shiliyah is always going to be asur. Okay, no matter what. Because whether there's a vlad or whether there's no other vlad, what did Rabbi Elazar said? He said, if there's another vlad, then you don't have to worry and you can eat the shiliyah. Comes Rabbi Yochanan and says, whether you see another vlad or not, you still have to worry that maybe in this shiliyah there was a vlad. So it sounds like Rabbi Yochanan is machmir. So they say this doesn't make any sense because Rabbi Yirmiyah said lechumra amara Rabbi Elazar. The Rabbi Elazar was machmir. So therefore, they change what they said here. Ela'i etmar hachi etmar. This is really what the machloka was. Amar Rabbi Elazar, lo shanu ela she'ena kshura bevlad. This is talking about in a case where the placenta isn't attached to a vlad. Aval kshura bevlad ein choshishin levlad acher. But if it's attached to a vlad, then you don't have to worry about another vlad. But kol od it's not attached, then, right, so let's just go through it. If it's kshura bevlad, and there's one vlad inside, there's one placenta, and they're connected, then you don't have to worry that there was anything in there. But if it's not attached to anything, then you have to worry that maybe there was another, right, that maybe there's a vlad in there. V'Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Ein lanu ela shilia belo vlad. Aval yeshi ma vlad, ben kshura bevlad, ben ein kshura bevlad, ein choshishin levlad acher. And here Rabbi Yochanan comes out being meikel, because what does he say? It doesn't matter. Okay, we've changed what Rabbi Yochanan said entirely. Now he's saying, it doesn't matter, right? Ein lanu ela shilia belo vlad. This is only in a case, the only time we're going to be machmir is if there's a shilia without a vlad. It doesn't need to be connected to anything, okay? But yesh, if we find a placenta and we find a vlad and we don't see anything else, we don't see an additional placenta, we don't see an additional vlad, you don't need to worry. Whereas Rabbi Elazar said, only if they're attached, you don't have to worry. But if they're not attached, then you have to worry that maybe this vlad had a placenta that's no longer there and this placenta had a fetus that's no longer there, and you have to be machmir and not eat the placenta. Okay, and that's why Rabbi Yochanan comes out being more meikel, according to this reading. V'hainu deka'amar Rabbi Yirmiyah, and this explains what Rabbi Yirmiyah said, l'chumra amra Rabbi Elazar. Okay. Tanya kabatei to Rabbi Elazar, now we're going to bring a braita that supports his reading. Hamapelet min behema chayav va'of. This is talking about a woman now. A woman who has miscarried something that looks, we saw this weird case before, something that has an animal-like look to it, or a bird-like look to it. Vishilyai mahem. Okay, and the placenta comes out. Bizman shekshura bahen ein choshashin levlad acher. Now, what's the concern for vlad acher here? This is talking about if she's mapelet min beima chayava of, she doesn't need to wait the demei leida, right? The yimei dam, there's the dam yoledet of either 7 or 14, boy, male, female. And the 33, right, or the altogether 40 days, right, from day number 7 to 40, those 33 days of Dam Tohar for a male, and the 80, right, the 66 plus the 14, right, the 66 Demei Tohar for the woman, for a female baby. So if she has a Beima Chayava Of, then she doesn't have to worry about all those days, okay? Basically, if she bleeds, so she waits the day she's bleeding, and that's it. But, and also, if it's not that, then she doesn't have the kula of any days that come after the damim tmeim days are damim tehorim. Okay, so it's like both lechumra and lechula, lekula and lechumra, because remember, the first days are going to be problematic. The next days are only issues not to go to the mikdash, but she's actually permitted to her husband, even if she bleeds, right? It's that strange thing about dam yoled. So now what do they say? So let's go back. Hamapelet min behema chayava of. So she miscarries. Number one, she's got this behemar chayava of this ubar that looks like an animal and a placenta. So this is just like Rabbi Elazar. Bizman shekshura behem. If the placenta is connected to what she miscarried, ein choshishin levlad achir. We don't have to worry that this placenta maybe was carrying an actual baby, in which case she miscarried an actual real human, that she would need to wait the Yemei Demei Tameh, and then the Demei Tohar would kick in. But Einak Shura Behen, but if it wasn't attached, so she miscarries a placenta, and she miscarries this animal-like fetus. So then, right, this would be like Rabbi Elazar, Hareini Matil Aleha Chomer Shnei Vladot. Shani Omer, Shema Nimoach Shfir Shel Shliya. Maybe the whatever was in the placenta, the fetus, was destroyed. B'shema, kind of dissolved. B'shema nimocha shliyato shel shfir. And maybe the animal's placenta also, dissolved. So therefore, you have to, now what's the chumra of shnei vladot? The chumra is, maybe, right, again, dam tamei kicks in, right, for the first 14 days, because maybe it was a female. And then, additionally, from that day on to day 80, any dam she has then is not going to be dam tohar, because maybe it came from the animal, and therefore there is no such concept of dam tohar. Okay, next case. Hamibakeret she pila. So what did we say? In this case, right, we distinguish between the mibakeret and the muktashim. If she's about to have her firstborn and she miscarries, so what do we say? That she can throw, she miscarries a shiliah, she can throw the shiliah to the dogs. It doesn't have kedushah b'chor. My time, huh? Amarav ika bereda rav ami, rov behemot yoldot. Okay, so here we get into games of majority. We go by rov. Now, most behemot yoldot davar hakadosh bebechorah. Most yoldot give birth to something that could be a bechor. Umiut behemot davar she'eno kadosh bebechorah. Okay, this means that right, most give birth to a healthy, right. I think the concept is here. Is it this is just right as a zachar. Right, the cancer is a zachar, right? That's what the other thing comes in after. In other words, majority or 50-50, right, become male versus female, okay? So, in other words, sometimes you might give birth to a female, which isn't going to be kadosh. So, that's, I don't know why they say rov, it's really 50-50, but okay. So now they're saying, rov be'mot yoldo davar kadosh be'bechorah, mi'u be'mot davar she'eno kadosh be'bechorah. Umay nihu. Oh, so no, they're actually not. I don't know why Rashi says zechor. Really, what they're talking about right now is no. This is sorry. Back to the beginning. Most behemot give birth to things that are ra'oi to be kadosh, which is my nihu nidme. Okay, this is nidme, which means it looks like what right.
It's supposed to be.
It's supposed to be. Okay. For example, a para gives birth to something that looks like a para and not something that looks like something else. So that would be nidme. V'chol ha'yoldot, yoldot mechzacharim or mechzanikevot, right? And 50-50, it's going to be male or 50-50 female. So now, samach mi'uta l'nidme, u'mechzat d'nikevot, v'havel ischarim mi'uta. In other words, take the very minority, let's say 1 in every 100 is going to be not a thing that you don't have to give a bechor if it doesn't look like its mother. Okay? Then there's no bechor. So let's say you've taken 1 out of every 100, that you know there's a miut of that or 2, let's say, and then 50-50 male female, you're already under rov at that point. Okay? And therefore you can assume that this rov, chances are this wasn't a zahar that was going to end up being a bechor. Okay? As soon as you say that there's 1 in every whatever that's not going to be, that's a zahar, that's not going to be a before, you're already less than 50%. Ubimukdashim tikaver, but here it is. Why? My time, aruba bar mikdashu. In kodshim, a lot of korbanot can be brought with nikevot also. So therefore, most animals are ra'oi to be kodesh, and therefore, we're going to say it's a problem. Ve'en kovrinota. Okay. Abai v'rava, these are the darchei amuri. Abai v'rava damrei travayu, here's their definition of what's going to be considered superstitious and you can't do versus what's going to be superstitious that you can do. Kol davar sheyesh bo refuah, if it heals, ein bo mishum darchei amuri. If this is what the non-Jews do for healing purposes and you do that, it's fine. Ein bo refuah, but if it's not going to heal you, yesh bo mishum darchei amuri. Okay, so now the Gemara says, wait a minute. V'hatanya, but isn't there a brayta that says, Ilan shemashir perotav, if you have a tree whose fruits are falling all the time before they ripen, sick tree, okay? The assumption is that maybe the tree is very heavy, it's got too many fruits on it, and they're weighing down the tree and taking away all the nutrients, and there's not enough to get around. So what do you want to do to fix it? You want to basically weaken the tree so that it grows less fruits and then it'll actually grow healthier fruits. That's what they want to do. So, what do you do to solve this problem? So, krobus sikri, you paint it red. Vitoanova avanim, and you put avanim on it. You put, big stones on this tree. Bishlama toanova avanim. I understand why you put avanim on it. Kiheha denichush chile. You want to weaken it. That will putting, okay, I don't know if this really works, but putting heavy stones on it would weaken the tree because of the, right, it'll then, what will it do? It'll cause, the weight, it'll cause a lot of the fruits to fall, and then you'll be able to strengthen the tree. supposedly, I don't know. Ela sokro besikra amai, but painting it red? Painting it red seems to be a pretty superstitious thing. I tried to look up online something, if I could find anything about painting trees red. I couldn't find anything except paintings and things like that.
But they paint them white.
I've seen that.
For what purpose?
I don't know,
but I've seen
right.
it.
I have seen trees painted white, but I don't know. Yeah, right. It could be to heal the tree. That's interesting.
No.
It keeps the bugs off. So maybe the red does something. That's very interesting. But they didn't know that. That's why I wanted to look it up. I wanted to see, was there any real, something real to this?
Red is easier to obtain than white.
That's true. Amai, right, they often talk about dyeing things red and all that.
Yeah, that
so amai, ki hechi delichzio inche vilibai rachamim aluyeh. In other words, right now we're at a question, right? That clearly is our family, superstitious. So they said, no. That's so that people will see it and notice it. They'll know it's a sick tree. And what will they do? They'll pray for the tree. And in praying for the tree, that will help heal it. Kiditanya, as it says in the Braita, about the mitzora, v'tamei tamei yikra. Right? Why do you announce in public that the he's tamei? Right? You scream it out and you say tamei. Tzarich lehodiyah l'rabim v'rabim mevakshim alav rachamim. Okay, it's a way that you're going to get people to ask for rachamim. And this is viewed as that will heal the person. Okay, and that might heal the tree. Which again, I think can be understood in many different ways. Often when people want to try to heal, right, people pray for rachamim. And we all know this to be the case, that what happens, it's mechazek, sometimes the family, the people, it helps healing for other reasons. Maybe not medical reasons, but there's strength to that. Maybe also by people knowing about the tree. Here it's a little more difficult because the tree doesn't have any feelings. But maybe people will pay more attention to the tree, will come up with solutions for how to help fix the tree. Same thing with someone who's sick, right? People might know other people. The more people know about it, the more people are thinking about it, it ultimately helps. V'chol mi she'irabo davar, tzarich lo'odia l'rabim. So anyone who has something going wrong, right? This is interesting. You have people who are very quiet about things, and this is saying, don't be quiet about it. Let people know. V'rabim mevakshim alav rachamim. Amar Ravina, kiman talina kovsa b'dikla. So people now who hang, a bunch of dates on a tree as a siman that this tree is like, they hang a whole bunch there to show that this is a sick tree. Kiman, who do they go like? Because again, it looks like it's a superstitious thing. Ki hai tana, it holds like this tana. Okay, I just want to end, I'm a little over, but the Shulchan Aruch paskins, okay, this comes up in Hilchot Shabbat. If you remember, we learned Hilchot Shabbat all about amulets. Can you carry them on Shabbat? Okay, is it Hotza'ah? So they get into Dorchei Amori, and in Hilchot Shabbat, Siman Shin Aleph in Or Chaim, Siman Kav Zayin, it's Sif Kav Zayin, it says, Kol Lachash Mutar, okay, any Lachash, like whispering, these incantations, V'lo Asaro Ela Ba'otan Shebadkan Ve'enam Mo'ilim. This is only true for ones that have been checked out not to work. Okay, so basically, what does he say? Kol Ov, we don't know, it doesn't work. We can assume it works. It's only if it's been proven that it doesn't work that you can't use it that we call this superstition, which is very interesting, right? It gives you all the more ability to do these things without saying it's only going to be superstition if you could prove that it hasn't worked. The yesh misha chashash, some people say, b'chol kamiya she'enu mumche, mishum dorchei amori. If it's not like written by a specialist who specializes in writing amulets, right? It's hard for us to understand these things. But anyway, then one second, I just wanted to quote something in the Mishnah Berurah. He says, "Gamzei Rapei Babaksa Kemo Nikar Kevan Shavigilod Halachashim Yerpu Eini Shor Elabotam Shiadan." Right? He just stresses that it's only a sore with those who not. He quotes the Gra who says, "One second, Habachol the Imacholehu." Right. Then he adds, very interesting, in the Mishnah Berurah, "Imucholehu Davar Sheyesh Bo Chashas Sakana Nir Ed LeKulei Alma Sharei Bechol Gavne." It's an amazing statement. You can do whatever you want. If someone's really sick, you can do whatever you want and don't worry about this halachot at all. It's really an interesting way to end the parak. Hadron alach behema hamaksha. Interesting way to end this parak.
Very nice.